Are you a scaredy cat? That's a funny question, isn't it? Go back to another example of my son Marshall. He was out in the water. He had his boat coat on. If you don't know what a boat coat is, it's a life preserver. And we'd put this on, and he was bouncing around in the water, and he started to move a little farther out in the water, and he started to get scared. He said, "Daddy, Daddy," you know, and I grabbed him and all, and I thought to myself, "Boy, my kid's a scaredy cat." I had thinking, you know, I wonder where he gets that from. Well, he doesn't get this from his mother. And so I realized, and given a lot of thought, I'm a scaredy cat. And I'll, like, you know, elaborate on that. I am a card-carrying, hand-wringing, brow-mopping, knee-knocking scaredy cat. I'll give you an example of this. Again, it involves Marshall, but I was talking to Mr. Anderson, Carl Anderson, a while back, and I said, you know, I worry. I just worry too much. I worry too much about my life. I worry about all kinds of things I shouldn't be worrying about. I'm not trusting God enough. And he says, well, I was telling him about Marshall. And I, you know, how Marshall grows up to be, you know, this or that or the other. And he said, well, John, that's my impression of Carl. He said, John, did you have him blessed? I said, well, yeah, I did, Carl. I had him blessed twice, actually. He said, and it dawned on me, and it has weighed on me for quite a long time, that I don't trust God enough. And I know this is an unusual kind of format, but not too long ago, somebody stood in front of you, the congregation, and asked that you would help him in a sermonette form to be more generous and to be more thoughtful as a person. This was a couple years ago. And I thought that was an interesting sermonette. And so I, in this form today, I'm going to be asking you similar. I'm going to ask you to help me to be less fearful and have more courage and trust in God. I'm going to share my heart with you today a little bit, and then share some of the things that God says not to be afraid of. You know, it's pretty important stuff. In Revelation, it says that the cowardly and the unbelieving will have their place in the second death. So as Christians, as believers, there's absolutely no room to be afraid. And I realize a big part of my life, you know, they say, motivational speakers say, well, you either do things from pleasure or from fear. I realize that I have too much fear in my life as a Christian, and I'm asking for your help, and I'm asking that you indulge me and let me share some of that today. So what I want to talk to you today about is fear, and three things God specifically says not to fear. And the first one of those is fear of man. I want you to turn, if you could, over to Luke. Got to get my glasses out. I do this each time. I forget every time. Luke 12 and verse 4. These are scriptures we know about, and I just want us to think a little bit more about, and I need to meditate more on. Luke 12 and verse 4. I say to you, my friends, do not be afraid of those who kill the body, and after that, they have no more that they can do. You know, we can be afraid. There's been some awful things that have happened to Christians over the years, right? And in the end time, it says that there are some things that will happen. God tells us not to worry about those things, not to worry, you know, we can't engage in worrying about what man could do because of what we believe. But I'll show you whom you should fear, and here's the key. Fear him who, after he has killed you, has cast you into hell. Yes, I say to you, fear him. And he's talking about, you know, God the Father. You know, the key here is that the more you fear God the Father, the less you fear men. And one of a little side note, verse 8, also I say to you, whoever confesses me before men doesn't have that kind of fear of men, be willing to be able to do that, him the Son of Man will confess before the angels of God. And I think of Peter as the example here, right? Peter, it's such a great story. I'll try to keep this short, but, you know, here he goes to the denial of who Jesus Christ was. And then not that long after, less than 50 days, stands up in front of thousands of people, takes that chance and that risk, fearing man, and confesses who Jesus Christ is. And, of course, several, you know, thousand people are converted by that change in his life. Example, Peter, he stood up in front of thousands. And, you know, I thought about this. It isn't just who could kill you. But on a day-to-day basis, who intimidates you? Who intimidates me? Who keeps you from being the person you should be on a daily basis? There's someone that you're afraid of or you're intimidated by. You know, Messiah, Jesus Christ, was not afraid of anyone. He was not intimidated by anyone. And the more we allow Christ to live in us, the principle is, the less we'll be intimidated by people. My job, I'll say the one thing I'm not afraid of is, in my business, I'm a salesman part of the time now. And I have to meet heads of companies and stuff and talk to them. I'm never afraid of the big shots. I don't know why. I'm just not like that. Some people are. I don't know. I think maybe because I realized at one time they were little shots and now they're big shots. And they're just people. They're just people. You know, people are just people trying to make their way. And we have no reason to be afraid of anyone or to be intimidated by anyone to keep us from who we're to become. The second example that I have is a fear of tomorrow. If you just look across from Luke 12, what I mean by the fear of tomorrow is the constant hand-wringing about this or that or details in our life. And certainly as Americans, you know, we're so blessed. And get to that in a minute. Luke 12 and verse 22 through 28. I want to read all of this if I can. I'll go through it. Therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life or what you will eat, nor about the body and what you'll put on. Life is more than food, and the body is more than clothing. Consider the ravens, for neither they sow nor reap, which neither have storehouse nor barn, and God feeds them. And how much more value are you than the birds? And which of you by worrying can add a one cubit to his stature? You know, I'm 6'5" or 6'2", depending on which basketball program you're looking at. I can't add anything to my life by worrying, but I can destroy it by worrying too much and being overly concerned about things that I need not to be concerned about. If you are not able to do the least, why are you anxious to do the rest? Consider the lilies of the field and how they grow, and neither toil or spin. Yet I say to you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed as one of these. If then God so loves, clothes the grass, which is today, and the field tomorrow, and that is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you? And here's the kicker, oh, you of little faith. See, in my life, in my Christian life, I know that my fear comes from a lack of faith, and I need to work on that. Not to concern myself with the cares so much for tomorrow. Ecclesiastes 2, verse 22 and 23, you don't necessarily have to turn there, but it talks about how a man will put all his energy into his labor, into his job, and he'll worry about it, he won't sleep, and you know, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter at the end of the day. What we tend to do is we tend to, you know, we get to Saturday and we're worried about what's going to happen Sunday. Well, I got all this stuff to do Sunday. And you get to Sunday and you do what you're doing on Sunday, but your mind's really on Monday because you got Monday when you got work. And of course, you get engaged in work. And then, wow, you got this mountain of stuff to do Monday because it's Monday. And then you got Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You have worries every single day. You're worrying so much ahead that we tend to destroy our chance to be holy in the day. It destroys our ability to be who we are and who we're purposed to be. That's why God asks us not to worry, right? It sucks everything out of what we're to do today. We very seldom stop, at least in my case, we very seldom stop and enjoy the absolute blessing and grace that we've been given. It's really hard to do, but we've actually been trained, if you think about it, we're trained to be more concerned every single day about tomorrow rather than living in the blessing today. God says, you know what, don't be so overly concerned with tomorrow. It doesn't mean you don't plan, but it does mean you don't spend your time worrying and being concerned about it. The third thing that I have, and I want to spend a little bit more time on this, is change. God does not want us to be afraid of change. This is a hard one. I mean, you really, really think about it. Why am I not changing the way that I want to change as an individual? Why aren't I you? What's the reason for that? We're baptized. We made a commitment to God. We said, yes, we're going to live this way of life. Are the corners of my life that I'm still hanging on to that I'm afraid of relinquishing? Do I not like the possibility, what it really means to completely immerse myself in change? God doesn't want us to be afraid of change. Turn, if you would, over to Philippians 3 and verse 12 through 13. I really think, in essence, this is what Paul is saying in Philippians. Philippians 3, verses 12 through 13. I just love what he says here. You know, he talks about who he was, and he says he counted all those loss. You know, his self-righteousness, his pompous attitude, all of his carnal, who he was. Verse 12, not that I've already attained, he's talking about the resurrection, I'm already perfected, but I press on that I may lay hold of that which Christ Jesus has laid hold before me. I do not count myself to have apprehended the resurrection. But one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forward to those things which are ahead. The reason I chose the scriptures, I think Paul was passionate about the new person he would become every single day. And I think if we're not careful, we can be afraid of who, what are we afraid to relinquish? What part of our life do we not want change if we're really honest with ourselves? You know, what does that look like? A friend of mine always says, well, what does that look like? What does it look like to be a completely different individual? For whatever reason, my mind in the last year has been on Romans 6 so much, and I do want to read that. Romans 6 and verse 3, because it talks about that again. In verse 3, it says, do you not know that you were baptized into Christ's death? And then in verse 6, it says, knowing this, that our old man was crucified with him, that the body of sin might be done away with, and we should no longer be slaves of sin. We're dead to who we were. That theme, no matter what, all year has been just running through my mind. I can't shake it loose. And how hard that is, how afraid that we can be to really take that next step. And, you know, ultimately, the change is not up to us. It really isn't. If we trust God, he's going to change us and be the people that we need to become. Psalms 23. Psalms 23, if you turn there. This one was brought up to me by a friend of mine. I really like this. And all of Psalms, if you read this, David had such great trust in God, they had no fear. He really did not have fear. I mean, you study the life of David, and he really did not have fear at all. I think just to read Psalms 23, start in Psalms 24, just the first two verses. The earth is the Lord's and all his fullness, the world of those who dwell therein. For he has founded it upon the seas, and he established it in the waters. David had a very clear relationship with God. He understood who he was, and he trusted God. And so go to Psalms 23 and verse 4. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. This is interesting. You prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. David, in the worst and darkest possible times, did not have fear. Christ, in the worst and most challenging times, did not fear. Moses, worst and darkest times, did not fear. I want to be that man, and I hope that we all want to be that too. You know, God doesn't want us to fear change. He doesn't want us to fear and worry about tomorrow, and he certainly doesn't want us to fear man. And the less we do, the more productive we will be. One of my favorite stories is the story of Lewis and Clark. An unbelievable story. Looking for the Northwest Passage and what those men went through and how much courage they had. And there's a book called Undaunted Courage, which I read. But they faced grizzly bears, and they faced death in the snow, and they faced the Indians, faced the unknown. They had absolutely no way of knowing what they were facing. And Jefferson wrote this about Lewis after his death. He said, of courage undaunted, possessing of firmness and a perseverance of will, that which nothing but impossibilities could divert from his direction. Wouldn't that be great? I mean, I would love somebody to be able to write that about me, that courage undaunted, that I had so much courage to face almost anything. And like I said from the very beginning, I'm a scaredy cat. I'm not living enough by faith. And like I said, I wanted to share my heart here. That's really all I know how to do here. Because, you know, if I'm struggling with this, maybe somebody else is struggling with this too. I might be the only one. I don't know. The marshal had a right to be scared when he was swimming around in the water. I'm 27 years at this. I really don't have a right to be afraid anymore. So the purpose of the sermonette was just simply to share with you, you know, what God asks you not to be afraid of. You know, I'm asking you that you pray for me, and that all of us can believe, that have the courage that depends on a closeness to God, and trust that he is there for us.